I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello and welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for UK Seahawkers. We are once again off the back of a frustrating, disappointing Sunday night watching our beloved Seahawks. But as ever, myself, Stuart Court, is joined by Ross Bell and Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, guys?
Better now. If we've recorded Sunday, this would have been a very different podcast.
this is at least the fourth or fifth time we've said that. Adam?
Yeah, Ross, you've definitely said that at least four times this year. Whatever, bring on Sunday, try and bury it.
Bury the balls.
Yeah, yes, Serrano-esque.
Yeah, before we get into what happened, if we have to, on Sunday night in Tampa Bay, with just a few chapter notes. Next Sunday sees, yet again, another Scottish meet in Glasgow. It's all centred around the Packers game next Sunday night at 9:25 kickoff, I believe it is, set as the NFL have not flexed it to Sunday night. It's at Campus Bar in Glasgow. We will be having one of the organisers for it on the podcast next week to talk more about it. But also a massive thanks for that should go to Fireball. And if you are coming to the event next Sunday, make sure if you on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, anything, make sure to use the hashtag #FuelledByFireball. And also, talking to the two Scottish reps, Gordon Curry was announced and has won the logo competition for the chapter. So now the entire chapter of Seahawkers has emblazoned something which comes from these shores, which is pretty damn cool. So congratulations to Gordon.
Yeah, well done, mate.
It's pretty cool design as well.
Yeah.
Moving on to some VMAC notes. Not a lot has happened in terms of roster moves. The main one being that Mike Morgan appears set to return this week for sure. And also Kevin Smith, wide receiver, has rejoined the practice squad. Running back Zach Brooks was released to make way. But moving on, if we have to, Sunday night in Tampa Bay, a Trans-America flight was had by the Seahawks, and they never really got off the flight, it seemed, for as the first quarter flew by with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense rushing down the field all over. All catches went towards Mike Evans there, number 13, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers put 14 points up on the Seahawks defense. The offense never really got going while the defense finally found their feet for the next three quarters as they shut out and managed to turn the ball over on the Buccaneers a couple of times as well. But the offense was the main headline from this game. It was all very much of a muchness in terms of how messy it was, wasn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, to take us back to an even darker time in Seahawk history and the Super Bowl 49, I'm not sure if you remember Richard Sherman's face that they permanently show after the interception with that look of disgust, horror, and disappointment. And that, I feel that was basically my permanent face etched on for the entire 3.5 hours because it was just a complete crap show for the whole night.
Yeah, it was. On offense, obviously, most glaringly, as I said, defense sort out, but it just was not a fun watch for 3.5 hours. Ross?
One passing yard at halftime. I mean, that is appalling. He only got 150 in the second half as well, so it finishes 150. it was dreadful from start to finish, but the defense kept making chances, which stopped me from going to bed. Like, we get a turnover, and I think, oh, maybe you're never out of this. No, there we go. Another turnover by Wilson.
Yeah, but you had to absolutely chuck that ball at the end. It was a Hail Mary without really being a Hail Mary. It's our last chance to lose and all that. Let's try and find some positives in that 14-5 defeat, though. The defense really found their feet in some dominating fashion for the final three quarters. Bruce?
Yeah, the three superstars that were fully fit and able to play, and obviously Sherman as well, but KJ, Chancellor and Wagner, they dominated. They got taken over in the first quarter, but after that, they just put that game to bed, basically. The Bucks were not going to score any more points. We just couldn't score any more ourselves, but Wagner, Wright and Chancellor were just off the charts again.
Yeah, KJ Wright especially, he was absolutely everywhere. Pete Carroll's press conference yesterday was pretty cool because he told the story of how KJ Wright wanted to be used when he first got there and how adept he is at what he does now, in spite of the fact that he wants to be used differently at times. But obviously with Bobby alongside him now, it doesn't really matter too much. Adam, defense first 48 minutes was pretty spectacular, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were excellent. I mean, but to be honest, it shouldn't be too difficult if you... No, that's the wrong way of putting it. They're a three-man offense, and eventually we got the running game sorted, so that made it basically a two-man offense. But even then, Evans caught one ball in between four players. I mean, it was good, and they turned the ball over, and you couldn't ask that much more of them. But, you know, just going into the game, all this zonal defense, it just seemed ridiculous. Just stick Sherman on Mike Evans the whole game, have some safety help on him. And I can't think we would have been 14 down at any stage with that situation. It just seemed wrong the whole way through.
Yeah, but as you said, Mike Evans is a different species to most receivers. It's all hindsight, I guess, when he gets 80 yards and two touchdowns in half of football against the Seahawks. But I think the defense missing Earl Thomas, Michael Bennett, and someone else who I can't quite place. Oh, Mike Morgan obviously has been out for a few weeks as well. Deshaun Shedd, that's the other guy. It's quite impressive that the depth's there. I mean, Stephen Terrell and Nico Thorpe had a few issues facing the right way on occasion, but when they did, I mean, Stephen Terrell should have an interception to his name, shouldn't he, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy Lane's got to see him coming. And look, to be honest, there was nothing more that the defense really could have done. Give up 14 points on the road against any team. If I asked you that 8 times a year, you'd be absolutely delighted with that as an output. They were fine. And you can't ask for a lot more than them after they got over the first quarter blips.
Yeah, most definitely. Ross, anything to add on the defense?
I just think you can lose players like Chancellor and you can get by. You lose someone like Earl Thomas, there's no safety in the league like him, and it shows that he's just a massive drop off to the next person. Terrell didn't do badly, but he's not anywhere near Earl Thomas.
No, but also there is no one possibly in the world like Earl Thomas.
No.
he's on a different plane at times. Let's talk about the offense then. We'll start at the quarterback as we always do. This is one of his worst games, isn't it? In a pure laying it out stat line box score way, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, 17 for 33 for 151, 2 interceptions, no touchdowns, and a 38% rating, QBR rating of 51. It was probably even worse than the stat show because throws were high and wide all day.
And to Jermaine Kearse.
Well, five targets for one reception, 6 targets for Lockett, who was just getting nailed. He was just setting Lockett up to get hit every time he threw him the ball.
Yeah, it's the first OFA, I think, in Tyler Lockett's career that he hasn't caught a pass when he's been targeted. I think that's true.
I mean, Kearse was on for one until he hauled one in late on, was it a fourth down?
yeah, fourth and 14 is when Jermaine Kearse comes to play.
The fact that we converted a fourth down before we converted a third down in this game just tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, we were 0-for-11 at one point, I think it was. I think we finished 1-for-12 on third down, which is not going to get a lot done even when the offense is struggling. If you go 4-for-12 on third down, you've probably got a chance of getting at least a couple of free goals.
Yeah.
Adam, Mr. Wilson, again?
Yeah, I mean, Wilson's a weird one because every time he plays well, it's, you know, is he an MVP candidate? And then every time he plays badly, I feel like there's a tendency, certainly from me anyway, to go a little bit overboard. I mean, I don't necessarily blame him for shitting himself every time he dropped back because, you know, if you remember the first half of last season, he was seeing ghosts.
Yeah.
If he wasn't getting hit by humans, he was getting hit by imaginary ghosts and he was messing with his own mind. And I think that sort of happened again on Sunday. You know, I would have preferred a plan where it was, you know, ball in hand, throw it, ball in hand, throw it. Yeah. You know, I think we probably should have taken the 3-5-7 step drops out of the playbook entirely. But for whatever reason, we didn't. And, you know, I don't blame him for dumping it, although, you know, you would have liked a little bit more from your most important player.
Yeah, but also I think with the changing up the playbook, Pete Carroll said that he wishes he'd have told and made Darrell Bevell run the ball more because I think Thomas Hall had 12 carries. Yeah. I don't remember seeing Alex Collins with the ball in his hand. Will Tukwafu had possibly the worst play call of the season, 3rd and 1. He got half a yard. I think, is it Zach Whitman, Adam put on Twitter, Will Tukwafu is the definition of someone who can do a lot of jobs, but not very well. And that's probably
I thought the run game was worse than the pass game, to be honest. I thought we were getting even less. I would have passed run it less.
It's only Wilson tucking it and running that made the running stats look anything near respectable. 8 carries for 80 yards.
Yeah, but also, again, as Carol said, it's opportunities, and the opportunities for some reason were not there, because if you run the ball effectively, then it slows down the pass rush, which was just giving us nightmares, to put it lightly. Anyone else on offence that really stood out negatively? Ross?
Yeah, two guys. Both played right tackle. Both absolutely horror shows of right tackles. Could have played both of them and they couldn't have stopped one guy breezing past them. They were just terrible.
Bradley Sowell was better, but that's literally...
better than the worst right tackle to play football.
Yeah.
And it didn't help that Ifedi was falling for every stunt. It was more stunts than in a Die Hard film.
Yeah.
And he fell for every single one of them.
Yeah, I thought Hunt played okay in the middle. I mean, thrown in at the last minute.
Yeah, and Cable, he's the only one that, I think Cable praised him when he was asked about him, and he mentioned how Mark Glowinski played. But Gary Gilliam's a strange one. 5 months ago, he was the starting left tackle. Now he's sitting on the bench, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, that whole thing is either, well, you have the right to be either confused, B, annoyed, or C, both. Because, as you say, you go into the year thinking you've got your left tackle sorted, and it's probably one of the most specialised positions you can possibly have, and all of a sudden you're ripping it up and starting again. People like Cable get all the credit in the world from the TV guys, and, I do not know one other offensive line coach in the whole league. Do you guys know any of them?
No.
No,
I absolutely guarantee you that every NFL fan in the universe knows what Tom Cable's goatee beard looks like because they show him so much. And, you can't have it both ways. I mean, we got into a little bit of this on the Facebook group. For a guy that's been so in charge of recruitment, which he undoubtedly is, I expect better. And to be honest, I think this is on him. And this is the second or third year in a row where the line, is held together, if you ask me, by tracing paper. Mm. And I expect better, because it should be.
Yeah, well, I think the offensive line, and on a whole, I think there is not such a disparity between quarterback and offensive line in the NFL right now. If you listed all 32 quarterbacks and onto the O-line, there is no bigger gap between how the quality of the quarterback and the quality of the offensive line. But at the same time, I'm struggling to really get over worked up about what happened on Sunday with the O-line. Agreed. I think I said straight away, because it happens. It's the first time, is it 97 games, I think, it's in the 90s, that the Seahawks have been in a fourth quarter of a game and not been within a score or in the lead. That is just a ridiculous run. The biggest now, because that run is obviously over, is 35. So he was 60 games ahead. We'd had, 4 full seasons of just pure domination on a week-to-week basis. And that's why I'm not really getting... stuff like what happened on Sunday, it happens. 3 turnovers, 6 sacks. Russell Wilson, as Adam said, was seeing ghosts all day. But it happens. I think if this continues this week, because the Carolina D-line is probably, without Kuechly, is the thing that's going to keep them in the game on Sunday.
Yeah, Brian Short's playing well.
Yeah, and Kenny Ealy as well, who, if the Panthers win the Super Bowl, was probably the Super Bowl MVP. Yeah, but if it continues this week, then there's something to be concerned about. But George Fant was fine for the 2-3 weeks before. The team was the best team in the league to most people at 8:30 on Sunday night. What happened for those 3 hours on Sunday night doesn't really change that. Because if you ask Dallas, you ask Atlanta, you ask Minnesota or Detroit or Green Bay fans, the one team they do not want to face from here until Super Bowl Sunday, even probably some of the teams at AFC, there's one constant team, and it's the Seattle Seahawks. So I'm not really that fussed. That's my two penner, Russ.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fine. But we've seen Wilson get injured this season, and he got 12 quarterback hits this weekend and 6 sacks. You need to give him a little bit more support against a... This wasn't even a premier pass rush, I don't think. I'm not going to put the Bucs pass rush up there with the best. What's Reece Odhiambo got to do to play a game? The man that's played tackle throughout his college career and before that. He looked decent when he came in. Was it against the Patriots?
Eagles.
Eagles. Yeah, he looked good. Surely he's better than those two on the right side.
Yeah. Well, he's apparently clearly better than Garrett Gilliam, because I think Garrett Gilliam just lost his job on his podcast. That's how bad of a year he's having. He's... But yeah, Adam, do I have a point, or am I just ranting?
No, you do have a point, absolutely. And ultimately, the team is built to overcome the issues of shit on the offensive line. That's basically what it exists to do, and that's fine. But you know, I'm looking at the season now, and it's, you know, it's on 1 week, off 1 week, on 1 week, off. I think it's 5 games now where you've come away thinking offensively that doesn't look too clever, and I do have a lot of faith in the team, but ultimately there are other teams in the NFL that are also really good, and they're made up of good human beings that are good at football. And I don't think necessarily we can have a level of arrogance that, oh, you know, it'll all be fine. I'm not saying that the three of us do whatever, but there will always be that air of Seahawks arrogance that we'll get it right. Well, last year we didn't get it right for basically the same reasons. We got completely mauled up front by a Carolina team who were really up for it. And, you know, it's going to be hard if you face a team like Dallas or Atlanta. It would have been hard regardless, but it's just frustrating that this, for me, was the year that the offense should have been completely lights out. And I just feel that we're not there yet on a regular basis, which is just a bit frustrating. I mean, we do laugh on a regular basis at teams like the Rams for putting up offensive performances like we've done in 3 or 4 games this season.
Yeah.
No, but let's be honest, we laugh at the Rams for other reasons. Apart
from we laugh at the Rams.
we laugh at the Rams for Jeff Fisher saying that the Patriots have a good running back in Danny Woodhead, who's on IR for the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, but on Ram LOL bingo, I mean, their offensive struggle is certainly up there.
Yeah, I'll take that point. Other offensive players, we mentioned briefly, Jermaine Curse.
The rest of Twitter joined Adam in the hate on Sunday.
We've turned them round.
But it's this is a poor season, isn't it? Even for Jermaine Curse's not so pre-playoff standards, Ross.
Yeah, I mean, I sent you comments from an article, I think it was by Field Goals, about how he's been targeted, and he's targeted in the end zone more than... Well, he's up there with players like Alshon Jeffrey, Martellus Bennett, Kelvin Benjamin, Brandon Cooks and Delaney Walker. Why are we targeting Jermaine Curse that much in the red zone?
That's Delaney ludicrous. Walker?
Yeah. He was just dropping catches. He doesn't seem to get any sort of separation. I'm just waiting for Richardson to have that one game where he firmly puts Curse on the bench, basically.
Yeah, but if that's going to happen, surely that was going to happen on Sunday, because Curse just... I mean, even the ball was a ball on the sideline, which is a low catch.
Yeah.
But for a guy who we give whatever money we gave him to, I'm sure Adam has it imprinted in his brain.
15 million or something.
Yeah. I mean, he should be coming up with that pass. I mean, Doug Baldwin wouldn't drop that. Paul Richardson probably wouldn't drop that. Tyler Lockett wouldn't drop that.
No.
So it's the role he plays in the offense and in the locker room cannot be undersold and dismissed, because I think I don't know who it was tweeted that him, Baldwin and Wilson are in the corner of the locker room trying to sort things out in the post game.
Yeah.
That says a lot about his standing in the team, but he's somehow managed to fall down a bit of a cliff, and he's going to take a hell of a drop for the team to even consider releasing him or doing anything drastic like that at the end of the season. But yeah, it's a really strange one. I think the off-season we had was bad in free agency. Jamarcus Webb, I think Mark mentioned last week, Jamarcus Webb, Bradley Sowell, we gave money, too much money to Jermaine Curse. We gave money to Jeremy Lane when possibly we could have got, could have saw something from my boy Ty Smith, who I think is on the Jets practice squad right now. It's just, it was not.
Barry Evans, who's playing very well in New Orleans right now.
Yeah.
It's just, apart from the draft, it was all a bit weird.
The one thing we got was paying Baldwin, but yeah, that had to be done.
Yeah, but
the first thing for me is a little bit deeper. Sorry, just to go, just before we move on. I mean, it's not even necessarily about curse. I mean, Atlanta are very good at spreading the ball around. I think they had about 8 different receivers on Sunday. But there's times where you look at the players at the Seahawks target and you're just dumbfounded. George Farmer got 2 plays in a row in the fourth quarter.
What's up with that?
That might have been no huddle stuff, though. I mean, I don't know what the substitution deal is in those situations, but that might have been.
It absolutely may well have been. But, I mean, a couple of screens to George Farmer. I mean, put Lockett there. Force the ball to Baldwin. Force it to Graham. I don't care. I mean, we just seem to waste a lot of plays on players that aren't good enough or don't deserve to have a play wasted on them, to be honest.
Yeah, that is. I think that's also quite a lot of people's complaints with Mr. Bevel. Obviously, Fire Bevel is a popular hashtag in the halls of UK Seattle Seahawks fandom. But I think that is probably something they can hang their hat on. It's just some as you said, the George Farmer type players, just a bit of head scratcher far too often for a team, as you said earlier, Adam, which seemed primed for an absolute roll to the Super Bowl and just roll over everyone. It just hasn't happened for half the season. But as the team does, they do put, it's a 1-0 every week mentality and all that. There's a pretty cool story and comments from Pete Carey yesterday's press conference about 11-12 minutes in, if you want to go and watch it, where he tells the story of where that fermented and the moment that mentality started for him. It's really, really, really cool. Really good question from one of the journos assembled. But yeah, we'll put it behind us. We'll move on this week to Carolina. But before we get to that, we've got another draft in Seahawks.
The Seattle Seahawks select Earl Thomas.
Swings over the middle. And it's picked off. Intercepted by Earl Thomas.
Bobby Wagner.
Near the handoff and a fumble. Here's Wagner. Back for the touchdown, Seattle.
Bruce Irvin.
He's out. John Kuhn's the back. Thirds and good pressure on the first round pick. Bruce Irvin sacking Rodgers.
Right, this week, as we just mentioned quite heavily, the offensive line is the focus. So that's probably why you won't hear any highlight plays in the intro for this feature this week, because it's quite hard to find clips where commentator is talking about an O-lineman. But this week is a Connecticut Husky. He's Danish, and it's Andreas Knapp.
The whole college setting, the whole college football, like, I would have never dreamt of playing in front of 40, 50,000 people, because I was playing in front of 50. You know what I mean? At home, sometimes. Maybe a little more, but that was definitely one of the bigger, that have been one of the bigger and more exciting things. You get to represent not only a great university, but also your family and that type of stuff. It's super exciting for me.
He is a special, special guy. He's got a rare combination of tough gentlemen. He's got a rare combination of aggressive intelligence. And he is constantly inspecting his game, his moment, his aptitude, and trying to make the necessary corrections to be better. I mean, he carries that through the rest of his life. Don't put a limitation on him. He'll smash it to smithereens.
So yeah, Knapp is the right tackle for the Connecticut Huskies. He's a big old unit. It's 6'8", 325 pounds, which is 150 kilos, according to sportsreference.com. Yeah, he's just an absolute mauler. He's dominated. He's really, really solid footwork-wise and seems to just get it. Coming from Denmark, obviously, is quite a cool story. He's a 4-year starter for Connecticut. He's a team captain this year, if not as well last year. So he has some leadership qualities into him. As I say, he's just a big old unit. And we have Gary Gilliam and Bradley Sowell are looking, as Ross said in the review of the Buccaneers game. He is something definitely to keep an eye on. He probably is a second-day player. He could easily be one of the more budget picks if where you just take him a little later and get massive, massive upside from him, because he's only played the sport for 3.5-4 years, and he started at the Huskies as a defensive lineman, so Tom Cable will love him. Adam?
It sort of goes against all common NFL logic that you sort of pay the lines and you draft the outside guys, but you were bang on about Conklin in last year's draft, and so if you've nosed this guy out, I'm willing to give you my support.
Yeah, he does kind of remind me of Conklin, just not as aggressive as Conklin. So there's only a few clips on Draft Break, the brilliant draftbreakdown.com of him, so plenty more to watch between now and April, but I've come away quite impressed. And obviously, as I said, it is a pretty cool story to see Seahawks seem to fall for in the draft as well. But yeah, as ever, if you want to get involved with some suggestions, positions or players that you've spotted watching all the bowl games which are coming, obviously the Pac-12 championship game is tomorrow night, the Huskies against the Colorado Buffaloes. The Buffaloes have been. So it's a pretty cool story for them. Get involved and get in touch with us all over the social media platforms on Twitter, Facebook, and we even have an email account now. Next is Instagram, most likely. So get involved, and we will happily dive in and have a ganders at your suggestions for players or positions. Talking of offensive linemen, it's even more nailed on that that's the pick at the end of the first round, isn't it, Adam?
It has to be. I can't really think of any other position that desperately needs picking up. I mean, unless there is an absolute stud of a running back who's fallen down that far. You don't know what position we're going to have yet, but unless there's a stud that's fallen down, or, you know, I know Sam linebacker is a bit of a position that we do probably need to address, but, you know, I normally think just take the best player on the board and you can work him in one way or another, but it has to be an offensive lineman unless there's something remarkable.
Yeah, most likely. This is not the year, but as it looks right now, for the Seahawks to get clever. Obviously, they didn't get clever and drafted a Fedi, then had Jaron Reed fall all the way to 50. So if something crops up like that, I would expect an O-line, D-line mix in the first two rounds at this stage. Maybe a corner, depending on what they do to Sean Shepard. O-line at the end of the first, Russ, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I was all for getting a defensive end or a running back, but after last week, I'm all on the offensive tackles. Get as big a one as we can find.
A week is a long time in the NFL. Moving on, right, true or false, we got a topic where one of us believes something to be true or false, and me or Ross and Adam agree or disagree. So Ross, do you want to go first?
Three teams are going to make the playoffs from the NFC East.
Adam?
I think that could well be true. I was briefly congratulating our podcast guest from last week, Charles Dagnall, on their victory on Sunday, and we were quickly discussing potential playoffs. And I think there might be a sneaky chance that an NFC South team could squeeze in. The Giants have a particularly tricky schedule from here on in, and it wouldn't surprise me if they lost quite a few games. But I think the East could have a decent run of it, which is slightly annoying because we play that division next year.
Yeah. Most definitely. As I said a couple of weeks ago, it's a division which is going to kill itself. It doesn't seem to be. It just seems to be the Eagles are killing themselves and everyone else is having the party. I think that is false. I think Adam's hit the other one. I think it will be the NFC South, which spoils that fun. I think the Saints, Drew Brees, I think Adam pointed out on one platform on Sunday, he's having a season that no one really seems to be paying any attention to.
The MVP talk, definitely.
He is. 100%. He is just doing things with a young, inexperienced offense and everything. He's just absolutely dicing teams. The fact, also talking to the Saints, that Willie Snead threw a touchdown pass while up 21 against the Rams is another thing to add to the, was it, add on the Ram lol bingo.
Absolutely. I mean, look, anything that can put 49 points up on the Rams, I don't care who you are, that's impressive.
Yeah, it really is. And as I think MVP is should be something that's associated with Drew Brees, but that's one the main reason I think that's false. I think the NFC South, I've got to spoil that party now. We saw Jameis Winston just take chance after chance and throw the ball up. Didn't really have to. That Cam Chancellor interception was stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Fox and the NFC South are going to spoil that. Adam?
My true or false was, with the news that Gronkowski is going to probably miss the rest of the season, the Patriots will not make the Super Bowl.
Ooh. It's so hard to say false because it's the Patriots and it's just what they do. But I'm going to say false. Raiders. Raiders are going to the Super Bowl from the AFC.
Yeah, I think the Steelers are going to get hot at some point. But yeah, I think that's false. I think it is that big. I mean, I think it's like a 2 yard difference in plays when he's in the offense compared to when he isn't. So yeah, I think false. I think it's a massive, massive blow to him. But yeah, we are 3/4 of the way through the podcast. And Mr. Nathan's got to leave us for other duties. So
apologies. I wish everyone an enjoyable Sunday night. I think we will end up getting the win by maybe about 6 or 7 points. I'm not sleeping on the Panthers. Well, sleeping at 1:30 a.m. is an ironic term to use. But yeah, I think we will get it done. And go Hawks.
So my true or false, just for you, Russ.
Okay.
There is a division leader in the NFL which will miss the playoffs this year.
Ooh, a current division leader that will miss the playoffs. Yes, true. It's either coming from the AFC South or the NFC North. The Texans are currently leading 6-5. The Titans are on them, basically, 6-6. The Texans aren't a very good team, are they?
No.
And I don't know how the Lions keep winning games, either.
No, well, that 11-week run of always being behind in the fourth quarter carried on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that has to end eventually.
But yeah, that's the team I think will miss out. I agree. I think it'll be Texans. I think the Titans got a real legit shot. Mariota won AFC Offensive Player of the Month yesterday or today.
Yeah. And you still can't count the Colts out as well with Luck returning.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. But yeah, that's another week done of true or false. We'll probably get to that more and more often during the season. Now for a quick preview of this week's Sunday Nighter against Cam and the Carolina Panthers.
Heck of a day. It's a heck of a day. It's so hard to get this done. The elements were about as challenging again. We'll never, ever play another game like that. Everybody, your attitude about it was so freaking strong. You were so right about it. You didn't care.
No sleeves.
No sleeves. No sleeves. Get into all that stuff. Let's make sure we take this to the next step now. Have a ball with it today. We should love this thing up. And we come right on back and get it done. Let me ask you a question. Can you win the game in the first quarter?
No!
Can you win the
game? Hell no! No!
Right, yeah, so we move along after that show of whatever happened in Tampa Bay on last Sunday was, and we return home to the familiar confines of CenturyLink Field, and Cam Newton in his Inspector Gadget get-up rolls into town with the 4-7 Carolina Panthers. Last year's NFC Super Bowl representation really did struggle, went in a bye week in week 7 at 1-5, but have turned it around slightly as Cam Newton has started to move the ball and the defence has showed glimpses of the defence that got them to the Super Bowl. Confident this week, Russ?
Yes, I am, because bar the first half of the playoff game last year, we've always played close games with the Panthers and beaten them on more than one occasion, haven't we? So I'm fairly confident. They're without Luke Kuechly this week. They're without 2 left tackles. That's always going to be a big plus. And Kelvin Benjamin is questionable as well. So that helps. Yeah, I think if we can keep it close, we can overcome them. But yeah, like you said, you also mentioned about Cameron's Inspector Gadget get-up. That's underrated how terribly he dresses. People seem to love it. It looks like an absolute disaster.
Yeah, but I think it's a case of each to their own. I'm sure if he was our quarterback, which he isn't, Sean, so step away from the phone or radio or laptop, wherever you listen to this on. I think if he was our quarterback, we'd probably defend to the hilt, because do remember that our quarterback thinks water helps him recover from concussions. So
our quarterback's a robot.
Each to their own. But yeah, the team is really starting to find their stride. They've lost quite a few close games this year. The first game against the Saints, just for their bye week, was just a shootout. And last week, they come back from 17 points down, I think it was, before losing to the Raiders late on. So the record is could be somewhat false. And as Adam said to me the other day, that Cam Newton is the quarterback which it scares him the most in the league, because just of how he can absolutely kill you with his shotgun arm and obviously with his legs as well.
Yeah.
So who, apart from obviously Cam Newton, who else do the Seahawks defense need to key in on? Jonathan Stewart's a nice little winner back, isn't he?
Yeah, I still remember the first or second play of last year's playoff game. He gashed us for like 75 yards and almost got a touchdown before eventually getting a touchdown. He always seems to have fairly good games against us, so we need to, the run defense needs to be on point this week, definitely.
Yeah, it really does. I think, again, giving credence to Adam, he said that the Stewart Cam approach, double-headed monster, is kind of similar to how the Bills gassed us a few weeks ago with Shady and Ty God. But yeah, I'm quite weirdly after the last Sunday, quite weirdly confident. I think the defense debt on their side is going to massively, massively miss Kuechly, as anyone probably would. We'd miss Bobby Wagner if he wasn't there. The cornerbacks are attackable. I think James Bradbury looks quite a nice rookie on one side, but the other side is an absolute mess. Go back and watch the week 6 games against the Saints. Zach Sanchez bites on about 4 double moves on Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks had about 6,000. That game for Brandon Cooks is one reason Breeze should be MVP, because he got half his yards against Zach Sanchez. But yeah, they've turned it around slightly, as I said, but I'm still quite confident. I think, as I said earlier, the Kearney Healy and Star Latulele and the other guy they've got on the D-line, who I can't remember. But yeah, I think they're going to give our O-line a few jitters, which is always comforting after what we saw last Sunday, but confidence remains. Defensively, who needs to be on form on Sunday to stop all Cam, Calvin and Jay Stew, Russ?
Well, we're all back, aren't we? Apart from Devontae Moore, we're pretty much all fully fit, it seems. I think Shed's the only one that's kind of half and half at the minute. So I think Bennett's back, Thomas is back.
Yeah, it appears that way.
The main man for me in this, we have to stop Greg Olsen doing what he did to us last year. So this is another big Chancellor game. He has to dominate him.
Yeah, almost definitely. I think, not too sure what he stood, but before last Sunday's games, he was the leading receiver at tight end, ahead of Jimmy Graham, weirdly, for yardage.
Yeah, he's got...
So Jimmy's not having a bad season, but Olsen is just an absolute matchup nightmare.
Yeah, he's got
KJ's going to have to be keying in on him as well. So, yeah, I think if Benjamin doesn't make it, they've still got Greg Olsen. Ted Ginn's probably going to catch an 80-yarder and drop a 5-yarder, as he always does. But yeah, if Earl Thomas being back with Ted Ginn, with Corey Brown, they also have a wide receiver, is going to be quite important. Because as decently as Stephen Terrell looked on Sundays, as we said, he's no Earl Thomas. Offensively, who you wanting to see something from? Obviously, the O-line goes without saying. Anyone else?
Yeah, that has to improve, certainly. But they kind of go hand in hand. I want to see Wilson be Russell Wilson, and I want to see Doug Baldwin. He had 6 catches for 30 yards last weekend. He needs to turn those 6 catches into 120 yards this week.
Yeah, or at least a couple of touchdowns, because remember against the Eagles, he had 3 catches and 3 touchdowns. So the efficiency varies on a week to week. As I said, the week is a long time in the NFL. But for me, I think it's just seeing how much we give the ball to Thomas Rawls. Obviously, they're bringing him along slower than they did at the start of the season when he come back from his ankle. They're bringing him along a lot slower this time.
He didn't look bad, though, did he? From what I saw, he looked decent. He was a couple of times he got stopped in the backfield and still made it back to the line of scrimmage. Which is not his fault, is it?
That's the worst way to look good. Oh, you've managed to get back to the line of scrimmage. It's something that Gordon Wright said in the offseason to wrap him up in cotton wool, and it appears that they were bitten once with obviously his leg bruise, it turned to a leg break in the Rams game, and they've learnt from that, and they're treating him a little differently. I think, as Pete Carroll suggested, it's his third preseason game effectively, so you'd expect this is where he finally is let loose, and that'd be interesting to see also how little playing time Alex Collins gets. Wilter Kwafu could be looking over his shoulder, with Marcel Reese, the former Raiders fullback, in town yesterday for
a
visit.
Good signing if we sign him, I think. Because he played as running back for the Raiders for a little bit and had some good long touchdowns, I seem to remember.
Yeah, he is probably the best fullback out on the street, but yeah. There's probably a reason he's out on the street at this point of the season. Any score predictions for this Sunday night? Obviously, it's a half one Sunday night football. Hopefully, it's Tirico, because him and Collinsworth are working quite well together a little bit, so I've seen.
Yeah, it sounded nice. I love listening to Tirico. I'm going to go for a close one, 17-14, I think. Seahawks win in a proper defensive battle.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident. I think the Seahawks are going to win by at least 10, so I'm going to go 30-16, I think I'm going to be.
I'd rather watch your game.
let's just say this after the last Sunday night, anything but a 6-6. I think would be anything but a 6-6. But this is quite a daunting opposition. Obviously, as I said, the 4-7, but they've got talent, which in spite of that record, just a really slow Super Bowl hangover of a start. Yeah. But moving on, we will be back. Yet again next week, obviously, time TBD to preview the Packers game and a trip to Lambeau in December, which is always a nice, pleasant, warm experience, I'm sure. Hopefully, we'll be on the back of a Seahawks win. If people want to get involved, as we can, with drafting Seahawks, true or false, any questions, which I think we had a few of this week, didn't we, Russ?
Yeah, should we get to a few of those now?
Yeah, do it.
Let's do some of them, shall we? More comments, really, from people on our Facebook page. Matty Waugh said about the Bucks game, sometimes people just need a good punch in the chops to ground them and reignite their passions and drive. And that's what the Seahawks got last week. I think that's spot on, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's like a wake-up call. And wake-up call when you're 7-2 and that annoying tie, whatever it was.
I hate seeing that one.
It's so annoying. It's even more annoying when it's Pete Carroll's record or Russell Wilson's record come up. He's got that one there. It's going to be there for eternity. I think that's the team, mainly the wake-up call. We won't know, really, until this Sunday. But if you're going to get a wake-up call like that, do it with a three-game lead in your division when the rest of the division looks absolute turd. Is a good way to start. Any others, Russ?
Yeah, this one from Gavin Hart. He wants to know what's happened to our special teams. It's been pretty flat all year, really. I don't remember a massive Lockett run back, or even Ryan's punting wasn't great last weekend. And, I mean, bar Wagner blocking one field goal, that's the only highlight play that me and Gavin can remember. You got any standing out for you?
Not a lot is wrong with the special teams, I don't think. Nico Thorpe and I think it's DeAndre Elliott, the two gunners, are just closing in on would-be returners so quickly. I have no idea what the punt return yardage total is for the Seahawks special teams, but it must be up in the top three or five with just how gnarly they are. Because they just always
spoiled by that Super Bowl year where we just didn't, no one got any yards on run backs on us.
Yeah, there is that, but I think we're also on that end, we were spoiled by how flashy and quick and game changing Tyler Lockett was. But Tyler Lockett's still a game changer. If you watch, I think it's the Eagles game last week, they kicked it to him once and he returned it to like the 35-40. And then the next one, they kicked out of bounds because they didn't want to kick it to him.
True, yeah.
That is exactly the same effect. The field position battle for Pete Carroll is up there with turnovers and keeping the ball and explosive plays and stuff. So I don't think it's much wrong with the special teams. Tyler Lockett is back at his 100%, but people are kicking away from him or kicking to stop him having the returns. When last year he was an unknown quantity and he just absolutely annihilated teams. Because NFL teams have a lot of off-season to get through tape, and obviously they watch quite a lot of Tyler Lockett returns and found something. But he'll be back, it's fine, I think. I don't think it's much wrong at that end. The special teams doesn't need a field goal block or a Ricardo Lockett laying out the Michael James hit. It's to be good, it is quite a good unit still.
Yeah, that's fair. And also from Gavin Hart, do you think Pete Carroll was out-coached on Sunday?
No. I don't know. Possibly. I think he
was to start with.
I think he had too much faith in the people, the coaches and players, because as they have done in the past, they've got out of holes like they were in on Sunday. But I don't think out-coached. I just think it's a case where the opposition played up to us and we give them a 14-point head start, and the offense had issues and were flat all game. I think it was just a case. I mean, teams are allowed to play well against us. I think that's just what happened on Sunday.
Yeah, true. It's not nice to see. And I was furious Sunday. Your lack of being annoyed really annoyed me as well.
Yeah, I kind of picked up on that. So do you think Pete was out-coached?
I think to begin with, he was. Gavin also asked about making adjustments. I think they made adjustments, which...
They definitely did on defence, because they didn't score a point for 48 minutes. Or whatever.
Exactly.
It's only a 60-minute game. It's quite impressive.
Also, how the refs miffed that the safety on the first go around, how that was just called as a 1 yard line.
But as Richard Sherman said, wherever they throw the flag down on the ground, that's where the penalty was.
Right,
and they threw it down in the end zone.
Great.
So there's a miscommunication somewhere. Then it was Sherman asked the ref if he could challenge. He said yes, we can. He told Pete, challenge, and we got 2 points. But almost 50% of our points are Richard Sherman having a chat with the officials. So that's how good Sunday was.
Yeah, I wanted to.
Any other comments, questions?
They're the main highlight ones for me. But yeah, do get in contact with us more. We've got, like Stu said, we've got an email address. It is thepedestrianpodcast@googlemail.com or gmail.com. If you want to send any sort of long questions in or any your highlights or your lowlights of the week, send them in. We'll read them out.
And also, we are still open and welcoming people getting involved, as they did, I think James and Kieran did in the early part of the season.
Yeah, definitely.
By recording audio clips, sending them to probably Ross, as he's the editing czar of this podcast. If you just want just a quick question, quick comment, even some feedback via email, just send it all to Ross. Just flood his inbox. Give him some work to do on those tea breaks at Morrison's. But we are all on Twitter. The official chapter Twitter is @SeahawkersUK. My personal Twitter account is @Stu_Court. Adam Nathan is @AdamDNathan. Ross?
Ross Bell, 1984.
Yeah, and as I said, we will be back next week. Massive thanks for listening. Massive thanks for all the feedback we got on last week's episode. It was quite a fun one. Charles Dagnall will be coming back on the show in the near and foreseeable sometime in the future. But until next week, let's hope the Seahawks win. Let's hope the Washington Huskies bring home the Pac-12 championship and seal their place in the college football playoff tomorrow night, Friday night. But until then, this has been the Potassium Podcast, and
go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.
That was alright, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was that a really older? No. Not very sweary.